Talking with Karen Ranz of Launch Funding Network. Hello, how is everybody? This is Ken Brown, a passionate entrepreneur. Had Karen Ranz on a few calls. Wait, this might be your fourth interview. You get a star.
Yay. All right, I like those gold stars.
The title of this conversation we're going to have is, why does it cost money to raise money? I say again, why does it cost money to raise money? Now, just think of me as being the man on the street, Karen. I'm going to ask you some tough questions. Not that you probably have heard them all. So what we want to do is talk about the misconceptions that entrepreneurs have when they want to raise money. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, I got both guns blazing. The first question I want to ask you, and you've probably heard this before. Now, I'm an angel investor. I'm an entrepreneur. Why do I need to pay somebody like you to introduce me to angel investors?
That's a good question, Ken, and we do get that quite a bit. The thing is that sort of like do-it-yourself in a lot of different ways. If you know investors, if a company knows investors, if they know high net worth people that they can go out to raise millions of dollars, then they absolutely should do it themselves. Just like you can fix your house up, you can put your own floor down, you can paint your own walls, you can do all kinds of repairs to your own house if you want, if you know how to and you have the time to. But if you don't, then you hire a professional.
So what has been that experience when you hear some people say that? Do you ever check back with them in, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months and see what happens?
I do. I check back with them, and sometimes they eventually figure out that they need help. Sometimes they decide to keep on keeping on, and it takes them a very long time to raise the money that they're trying to raise, if they raise it at all. I mean, part of what we try to help folks understand, you will have to raise some on your own. Your friends and family, your balance sheet money that's going to get you started has to come through your own efforts. It doesn't make any sense to pay anybody to help you raise your friends and family round. Your friends and family round is really a euphemism for the people that you know. Because any company, this is one thing that regular investors look for, is that say you're 45, 50 years old and you've got this early stage company and you've put $50,000 in and you want to go raise $1 million. And one of the things that an investor looks for is that if you're of that age, you've been out of the workforce for a decade, you've been out of the college for a decade, you have worked with people, worked for people, had clients, been in some college fraternity or association, been in a chamber, been in a rotary, been someplace, you've been involved in things, that there are people that you know that because of your character and because of your work ethic are willing to put some money at risk at your because they're going to buy into your dream. And if you don't have the ability to raise $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 from people that you know, to be able to get things started, to be able to pay to do the other things like raise the rest of your money, and be able to pay to get your patent done, and pay to get your business plan done right, and pay to get financials done, and pay to fly around and get beta type customers or things like that, then and be able to allow you to work full time and getting your business going, then they figure there must be something wrong.
So is this like a test? I would think that entrepreneurs say, you know, I want to raise the money because I want to use other people's money, OPM. So is this just a test that people go through, a test of character?
Well, yeah, because it's kind of like, here's the analogy we give people. A lot of times people say, well, I don't want to go borrow from my friends. Well, you're not really borrowing from them. You know, I don't want to, I feel like I'm asking for a handout if I go to my friends or my family, you know, and they don't, you know, they've got $10,000 and you can get 10 people with $10,000, you have $100,000, right? So here's the way you look at it. If somebody told you that guaranteed there's gold out there in that yard or that field, all you got to do is find somebody with a shovel and you can go dig it up and you can have that gold. If you believe in your business and you believe that it's going to create you millions and these other investors that you don't know millions of dollars, are you going to, you have to think of that as the same way. So when you have to go get this shovel, are you going to go to a stranger and say, hey, stranger, come bring your shovel with me and I'm going to split this gold with you? Or are you going to go to your best buddy? You're going to go to your best buddy. Or you're going to go to your brother. Or you're going to go to, you know, somebody you know that you want to you know, to share in that benefit with you. So it's likewise with your business. If you believe that it's going to be successful, why wouldn't you put some capital at risk? Why wouldn't you give the opportunity to the people that you love or the people that know you through a, you know, a friend of a connection? It could be, you know, your not. It could be your brother's neighbor. It doesn't necessarily have to be your brother. But because you've written a good business plan, you've got a good strategy, and you've got passion and character, they're willing to put a little bit of money at risk for the potential for the big upside. And if they don't have the money or they don't have the means or whatever, then that's fine too. But at least you gave them the opportunity, and it's a character test that investors consider. They don't ever ask, they don't say anything about it, but it's a check mark that they have in their head when they're looking at a company.
So they're looking not only at the product or the service in the company, looking at you and your character, and if you cross that hurdle meet that test, then that's another positive sign for them to move forward.
Right, because if they don't know that entrepreneur, if the first time they've ever met them is because they've stood up at an event, like one of our events, and so they don't know anything about the character of this person. So part of what they want, they figure other people you know are going to put money at risk, then they are almost a vouch for your character. And so that's one of the mental tests that they go through.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned events. Why? How does the events go? What do you do on these events? What services do you offer? How does it differ from other angel investment events?
Okay. Well, we assist organization to us is the Network of Business Angels and Investors (NBA). And they host. It's a group of country club for investors, so to speak. They host meetings about every 6 weeks where companies that have gone through a screening process are given an opportunity to stand up and present to the group of angels. There's two ways you reach angels. And angels are those high net worth men and women, accredited investors that have enough extra capital liquidity that they can, in effect, gamble it by throwing $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 into private equity company that may or may not succeed. So these are a unique group of people because not a lot of people, you know, have that kind of cash just sitting around that they could lose. You know, they have to be willing to lose the money. All right, so you either meet these people because somebody introduces you and you sit down one-on-one over a cup of coffee and talk to them. It takes a lot of time to do that. Or you get an opportunity where you can put 30 of them in the room and you can tell your story in a 10-minute time frame to 30 potential investors. It's a real economies of scale for getting access to the investors. And a whole goal that comes out of an event like this is to create buzz so that when these investors walk away from the event, they can articulate in their mind what it is that you do in, you know, the elevator pitch, so that when they're on the golf course or they're at their own Rotary meeting or they're at, you know, the barbecue with the neighbor and something comes up on that industry or that topic or what have you been doing lately, they can say, you know, I saw this really interesting company at this investor event I went to and it does XYZ. Then that other potential investor might say, oh, that's interesting. I've been looking at things like that too. Do you have the information on that? And so you can have now the investors that are in the room become walking, talking billboards for your opportunity if it's something that they can get their hands around and see the compelling opportunity. And you can create real momentum in your capital raise by using events effectively.
Okay, that sounds interesting. But how do you differ from some of the other angel investing events? What makes you special? What makes you unique?
The main thing that makes us unique within NBA&I itself is that they're not industry specific or even stage specific. There's a lot of investor groups that will only do technology and they'll only do it in their geography, and we're also not geographic specific. So what you have is a group of people that come together that look at business opportunities for the opportunity of the business and if they understand it. So a guy that would normally invest in a software company might invest in a wireless technology company because it just made sense, or invest in a widget company, a company that makes tables or something like that because the business model just makes sense. And the investors want to know two things. They want to know How are they going to get a pay raise? Because their money's already working for them someplace else. So they want to know, and they want to know how they're going to mitigate risk. So it's always a risk. They're willing to accept a lower reward if the risk is lower as well. So high reward, higher risk; low reward, lower risk. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Interesting. So let me just throw a statement that you've probably heard, you being in the angel investment industry. So have you ever heard this? I got this next hot technology, must have. We're going to be the next Google. What would be your reaction to that statement?
Well, the thing that's so funny about that is that we do hear that. Because, you know, entrepreneurs, of course, by the very nature, are in love with the business that they have. You know, it's their heart and soul. And so the thing they have to understand is that if an investor has been around any length of time in doing this thing, he's made plenty of bad investments and has seen plenty of businesses that thought they were the next big Google and nothing ever happened with them. There's a lot of reasons why that occurs, but, you know, part of it is undercapitalization, and the age-old rule is that an investor will invest in a company with a B product and an A management team faster than they'll invest with a company that has an A product and a B management team. Because there's all kinds of examples of companies that had outstanding products but never went anywhere because management did not know how to execute. And so you had a management team that was inexperienced or didn't really truly understand how to go to market, and this incredible product that could have, you know, solved age-old problems in the marketplace never got to the marketplace just because of the management team and never became successful because of that. But a product that was, I mean, it's the VHS beta story, right?
I was going to ask you, do you have any experience on those, say, you know, past some, just between you and I?
Yeah.
You probably can't do that, but any names or companies? But you said beta. What happened there?
Well, remember when, you know, beta was a superior technology to VHS, but it languished, and VHS leapfrogged it and became the standard. And because of management decisions on how it went to market and how they priced it at first and just all those kinds of things, you know. So, I'm not an expert in that particular story, but it's one of those anecdotal examples that people use all the time.
Don't be beta.
Don't be beta, yeah.
Don't end up being beta.
Yeah, so, you know, that's when I first left IBM to go help a client go to market and raise the money that he needed. And of course, timing was really bad because it was during the whole dot-com crash. But here is a product that would have just revolutionized the medical healthcare industry in the way that doctors could diagnose patients using ability to manipulate the images in a three-dimensional format and isolate things based on the density of matter within that. And he was very close to getting money, but he had no real experience in building a company beyond like a couple $1 million in revenue that he had had a software company before. And here was a company that had potential to be a, you know, $500 million company. And he'd never built a company like that. But because and the people he had built on his team were like his old buddies. They weren't, a CFO had never really been a CFO, and, you know, he was an accountant, you know, and so he didn't really and it's okay when you're first getting started to have a team like that, but you've got to recognize that you're going to have to replace yourself. It's much better to be a rich founder than a poor CEO.
Well said.
And this guy right now is a poor CEO. That product never got to market because his ego got in the way of him accepting the advice of the investors that he needed to bring, or an investor that wanted to come in and be the CEO of the company, and he wouldn't let that happen because of his ego. And so as a result, a classic example of how this, had he not let his ego get in the way, this product would have saved lives, is when the twins, I don't even remember that doctor, was trying to separate the twins, the Chinese twins that were joined at the head.
Yes, yes.
And when they were in the middle of the surgery, they discovered there was a vein in there that they didn't know was there. And as a result, the twins died, right? Oh. And so had he had this technology, because you would have been able to use the CAT scan and the MRIs to isolate the veins, and because of the density of matter, you know, veins have a different density than blood, and blood has a different density than, you know, all this stuff, they would have been able to see exactly where all the veins were, because it would have isolated just those veins, and they would have seen that vein.
Save the twins.
Yeah, I mean, it's lots of other example, lots of other ways that it could be used that would have saved lives with strokes and things like that. But it's tragedy, you know, and that's one of the things that investors look at. So to answer the ultimate question was, that's a big thing of what investors look for. Is it's not just it's traction. You know, the further along you get, the further you prove that the people want the product, then you can justify the management staying in place that they are. But at the very beginning of it, you have to be open to the fact that there may be somebody else that's better to run the company
and
take the product to market.
Initially, yes, great. It's the entrepreneurs run the show, but eventually where you want to take your company might take another personality.
Yeah, even Steve Jobs had to step out of Apple for a while because he was not the guy to take it through the next level. And fortunately, you know, at that point, but he was the guy to come back and reinvigorate it. Right, and reinvigorate it because he was Apple. But, you know, for a period of time when they had to grow up and be a real big company, they needed somebody else to do that for a while. And that was the decision that the investors in that case made. And it was, you know, for the good of Apple, which and the good of, you know, now we have iPod, right? Now we
Absolutely.
Can do podcasts like this.
Yeah. And you're on iTunes.
Yeah.
So what are the services that your company offers entrepreneurs seeking capital? What are the services there? What are you doing to help them raise that money?
Probably boil it down into two main things that we do. In our review and screening process, we validate that they are investor ready and that they're seeking the right kind of money at the right time. They're right amount of money, the right kind of money based on their stage of their company. So we validate that for them and help them understand, you know, what their options are with raising money. And then if they are seeking private equity money or loan money, we help companies get working capital loans. We had a company recently that while we're helping him identify a key, what we call an executive check, that somebody that has the ability to write a check to invest in the company but also wants to take a strategic role in the company because they've sold another company, they maybe had a package from a big company and they don't necessarily want to start a company from scratch. They don't have the means to buy a big company, so they can step in as a strategic executive within an early stage company and put money in there and continue to work for shares for a period of time. So we're looking for somebody like that for him. But also he got the tiger by the toe. He has a huge order from one of the big box retailers and needed to get, he did about $500,000 in sales last year, and this order itself was $600,000.
Wow.
So how is he going to go to a bank and get that kind of money? He can't go to a bank and get that kind of money because he doesn't have the track record. He's under 2 years old. Okay, so, but he's got to bring 70 containers of this product from China, and China wants their money, half of it up front and half of it when they ship. So he's got to come out of pocket with his, you know, basically it was about $500,000 in costs. I think the total value of the whole thing was like $800,000, but it was about $450,000 in costs. So where's he going to get that money?
So you evaluate their business plan, then you look at the possible resources, whether it's debt or whether it's angel investment money. What other services do you offer besides
this? Let me just finish the success story, because we were able to put the financing together, because one of the other challenges is that $450,000 has to float for 120 days. So, because by the time they invoice and collect from the big box retailer, they receive it, takes 3 weeks to ship it, you know, all this kind of stuff from China. I mean, so nobody's going to float $450,000 for 120 days, but we were able to put that together for him.
Okay.
And he came out of pocket. He didn't come out of pocket with anything. I mean, we had some fees for setting it up and kind of working it for him. And he's got, you know, there's a higher interest rate than what you would normally get on a long-term note on this, but it's still, I mean, it's amazing he's going to be able to generate this kind of revenue and then go do it again and again and again. And so in this case, it was a combination of debt and equity. And so we assess those guys, we assess what's the right way to do it, because it takes a long time to raise money, private equity money, compared to getting a loan, if you can qualify for the loan. And so that's a big piece of, you know, making sure you're using the money in the right way. And then the second thing, when it's that preparation work, you know, the, make sure if your business plan's not right, engaging a business plan person. If the financials aren't right, engaging a financial person. If you don't have the legal documents to raise money, go get a, helping you find the right lawyer that's affordable for you. If you don't have a patent, finding a patent agent that's affordable for you. Because we work with all, mostly early stage companies, so we try to, we have our strategic partners are affordable for early stage companies to be able to get what they need to get done. And then when it goes, the strategy to actually go get the money, we have the events, which is a piece of a total strategy that somebody should use depending on how much money they're trying to raise. And when we have a large amount of money, then we'll kind of, in effect, take them on a road show, take them to other angel investor events, take them to venture capital events, take them to create an environment where they get a buzz going on the through the internet, through some of the new media, to draw investors out of their comfort zone of where they are, sitting in their living room, to want to come find out about this company. So we have various strategies, and a lot of that information is on our website.
Wow, and it's very interesting that you mentioned that. So why couldn't somebody just raise the money then and then pay you after they raise the money? Is that an option?
Well, there's two reasons why that's not an option. One is because to make it contingent on raising funds is what a broker does, and we're not currently a registered broker dealer. The SEC regulates this industry so that people that are licensed and know how to do this can get paid based on contingency fees. Even almost all brokers have upfront fees as well as their contingency fees. And the reason for that is with brokers and such is because there's a lot of activity that goes into raising funds for somebody, and there's a lot of variables as to reasons why companies may never get funds as well. And so you have to, everybody wants to share in the reward of getting the funds at the back end.
How long does it take to do a deal like this? Does it take a couple days, 7 days, a month, 30 days?
No, if you're raising, like say you're raising $1 million, it can take you anywhere from 6 months to a year to raise $1 million, if you don't know the right. Now, if you know big fishes and you know somebody that strokes checks for $250,000, then you can get it raised shorter period of time. But, you know, for an early stage company raising $1 million, it can easily take 6 months to a year.
Okay, let me throw another one statement, then we'll wrap up. You ever heard this? All I need is $15 to $20 million to fund my business. What would be your reaction to that? You probably heard that before.
Well,
that's all I need.
The thing that we tell people, we try to give them a sense, you've got to have a strategy of what are you going to do with a little bit of money to create value in your organization so that then you can justify getting more money for your company without, you know, so that you don't end up with only like 3% of your company at the end of the day. So the main thing that we want to make sure that a company has the right expectations is that if you're raising, you can have $20 million to run your company after you have generated $5 million in revenue. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And you had the potential to be a $100 million company. Then you can go to a VC or a hedge fund or a pipe fund or some of these other places and get $20 million and only give up maybe 10 or 20% of your company. But if you're early stage and you have no revenue and you think you're going to get $15 million, unless it's truly rocket scientist kind of stuff and you can get into the right VC for something like that, you're not getting your $15 or $20 million and not keeping the majority of your company. You can give it up for, you know, you might have, you give up 80% of your company for $20 million maybe, but most entrepreneurs don't want to do that. So.
Okay, what about Google and Facebook? I mean, Google raised all this money. If Google can do it, can't we do it? That's what the entrepreneurs are talking about.
When did Google raise their money?
I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. I'm being a devil's advocate here.
I mean, I know the story of Amazon better than I know the story of Google, so.
Okay.
I mean, when Amazon first got started, they raised a couple $100,000 from their friends and family at 15 cents a share. Okay, then they went out to another, they did a second round through an extended network, you know, it's who do your investors know, and raised more, and went up to 25 cents a share. And then they went from that, till they finally went out to an outside and raised like $1 million, and it went at, I think it was at 75 cents a share was their first outside round, you know, and it wasn't until they had, you know, they were had this whole thing built, and they were getting traction and getting these kinds of things, that they went out and raised, you know, lots of money like that. And then they continued. Then they started, once they had things going, then they started, you know, because they were losing money for years. And so they kept getting, you know, $20 million, $40 million, all this kind of money from venture capital firms. Because, but the thing was that they had the metrics there with, you know, millions of people coming to them, you know, and buying books, and, you know, they were improving their processes and getting closer to break even and all those kind of things, you know. And then they finally went public, even when they still weren't making money, but because it was, their timing was right for that. And so that was a huge way that they provided liquidity back to their investors, but also raised significant amount of money for themselves to actually be able to go and finish doing what they needed to do to get profitable.
Wow. Karen Rands, Cougar Rand Holdings, Launch Funding Network. How do we contact you? What's the best way to reach you, Karen?
The best way to reach us would be to go through our website. There's on the Launch Funding Network website. You can reach that at launchfundingnetwork.com or launchfn.com. And if you are an entrepreneur and you want to get an initial consultation, you just register your business under the Get Started tab. If you've got other kinds of questions, you can contact us through the Contact Us page. There's a form to fill out for inquiries, and you can fill that out, and, you know, the emails will come to us, and we'll get back to you as quickly as we can.
Now, say, for instance, the information and knowledge you're passing to us is great, but within this short interview we're having, is there any way that we can reach out to you? Do you have any education materials, any books available?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Ken. We have I have two blogs. One is that entrepreneurs will definitely like, which is the
great blog, by the way.
Yeah, and I try to give. Thank you very much. I try to put interesting updates on there on a regular basis, and that's called entrepreneurblogspace.com. Entrepreneurblogspace.com.
If somebody wants that, they can subscribe to it.
Yep, I think there's an RSS feed in there, and then every time there's an update, they'll get that email about that. And then on the KYR Media site, kyrmedia.com, if you go to that site and click on books, there's probably 10 books in there that we've selected for entrepreneurs that are useful for entrepreneurs. There's also our angel investor books are on there, the Learn to Be an Angel Investor series. And then, of course, the podcast. This is, if you're depending on how you're listening to this podcast, you can go to, if you want to listen to previous ones, you can go to cougarrand.podomatic.com. And that is where all the podcasts get.
And you forgot My Virtual Angel World. Is that the other?
Well, yep, that's geared up towards angels, and I think entrepreneurs will probably enjoy some of that too, but the audience for that is primarily for angels, so it's myvirtualangelworld.com. And I guess that's probably the best way to get all the free information.
So you do get some things for free.
Oh, yeah, and then there's also on our website, also under info and links, there's a link to a number of articles there, things that we've written. There's a number of other articles from other people. A lot of information within the website itself. Just go around some of the different pages, and you'll get there's a wealth of information within the Launch FN website.
There you have Karen Rands of Cougar Rand Holdings, a Launch Funding Network. To summarize, in a minute or so, what do you want the listeners to get out of this conversation that we're having?
I want them to understand, whether it's us or anybody else, that there are professionals out there that have been raising money or experienced at raising money or helping advising clients on that, and that and just like you would pay a doctor for his opinion, or you would pay a lawyer for their expert opinion, or an accountant for their expert advice on tax management, or any other of the professions out there, the people that are out there that know how to reach the angels or know how to reach the financial markets, is a professional service that you need to be prepared to pay for. And and many of them can't take fees on the back end because it's regulated in such a way that they can't. And so they're maybe able to defer some fees. We do defer fees and try to help set up a payment plan for companies. But if you don't know how to do it yourself, then you need to hire a professional.
Karen Rands, Career Guide Home. Thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it.